This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the morning run continues. Melissa Idris, they're coughing. Julian Ng and myself, Sharad Kutin, with the top business stories of the day. Before we go to those stories, and we're going to be looking at Axiata, SPAD and PNB shortly. On the Breakfast Grill, after the 8 o'clock news, we have Dr. Mohammad Abdul Karim Abdullah. He's Group CEO of Serba Dynamica. And Julian, you're going to be speaking to him.
Yes, this is a company that's going for IPO, trying to raise about 600 million ringgit. It's a big one that we've seen for a while. They are a service company for the oil and gas sector. So the question is to be asked whether they would be able to weather the kind of turbulence that's going on in the oil and gas sector. But also, interestingly, they want to diversify into power plants and water treatment.
Yeah, what do you think about the timing of this? I mean, oil prices, while nowhere near the high levels we've seen previously, have done a lot better than the lows we saw last year. So for me, I'm thinking oil prices are starting to recover. The sentiment is also starting to recover. Why not get in there with your IPO while everyone's starting to get back into that feel-good factor?
Exactly. They're also not the first line of defense as far as oil price volatility is concerned, because they are involved in maintenance. So that would be the second line of defense. And in fact, their fortunes will depend on the degree of oil rigs that are operational out there. I know that many sovereign oil companies, national oil companies, as well as oil majors, have announced both CapEx and OPEX cut, right? It's the OPEX cut that is going to affect them. Mm-hmm. But the first thing that comes to mind is the CapEx cut. That is new explorations. That has to do with new explorations. And these guys are not really exposed to that.
Okay. There's a question of synergy, very quickly. I get the whole power plants thing, but water treatment? How is that synergistic? Is that the maintenance
side
of it?
They fix the machinery and the plants and the tools. Can they transfer that kind of engineering knowledge to also fixing power plants and water plants?
Well, lots of big companies around the world have that synergy, being in oil and gas and then moving into power as well as water. I think GE is one of the companies that have found that synergy well.
I also want to question him about the mispricing of IPOs. I know this is a little bit removed from the core business operations, because their share price is going to be, the IPO price is going to be decided at the 140 level. And I saw an RHB bank report, and RHB being the joint principal advisor for this deal, has valued the stock at between 2 ringgit and 2.25. So my question to him is that while it's good for these initial shareholders, which kind of participates in a kind of lottery to get some of those cheap shares, right, on the cheap. But my question to him is whether he can be satisfied with receiving 40 to 50% less money compared to if he goes with a fair valuation.
Okay, moving back to the stories that we have before us, Axiata Group Berhad has signed an agreement with Innovation Network Corporation of Japan and Khazanah National Berhad to sell part of its stake in its subsidiary, Edotco.
So they're going to raise about 600 million US dollars from this deal. And according to the CEO of Edotco, Suresh Sidhu, he says that he favors companies like INCG and Khazanah because they both add value and they're long-term strategic shareholders. But I'm just wondering whether this deal, as far as Khazanah is concerned, is a left-hand to right-hand kind of deal, because as Khazanah has gone from a 30%, 37% indirect shareholder of Edotco to a 13% a direct shareholder of Edotco, right?
Oh, I didn't
through their holding of Axiata. And 600 million US dollars cash represents a 6.5% cash yield to Axiata. So if they decided to pay out this as a special dividend on top of their 3.6% normal dividend yield alone, you're talking about a potential yield of 10% for Axiata if they decide to pay a special dividend. And Khazanah would benefit from that kind of largesse. In fact, they could just transfer this from the left hand to the right hand without coughing out 1 ringgit of money. And so this goes back to our discussion of whether the government is crowding out the private sector by being too involved in the investments in Malaysia.
Oh, I see. Okay, so I didn't see the left-hand, right-hand angle. I thought this was purely, you know, a move in the right direction of divestment. But now that you've put it into that perspective, I might have to rethink my my position.
You know, this question of crowding out, is that something that's in industry? Are industry players actually pushing back? Are they unhappy with the you know, the GLCs and JLICs being so involved? I mean, do they actually express it?
Do they have the financial firepower to fight the might of the Ministry of Finance Inc.? Think about the
exactly.
So much money is
that
consolidated
is the
under the office of the executive.
But do they grumble? I mean, do they articulate their concerns about being overshadowed by
they don't
the
grumble,
state?
They slowly fade away. Because, you know, the government dominates.
Because money has no loyalty, right? So if you don't find an opportunity here, go where there's an opportunity.
Well,
elsewhere.
Not only that. I mean, if the government is so involved in the economy and in the market activity, they will dominate the funding. And if you don't have, you choke a certain industry of funding, then, you know, the banks would just can be lazy and just rather lend to government institutions because, you know, the government can provide you with certain guarantees and therefore it is a better business to do than, say, a risky private sector entity. And as long as the government is in industry and tinkering around with business, where will private entities find the time to develop technology, to develop expertise? It will all be under the auspices of the government.
Okay, moving on. The Land Public Transport Commission, or SPAD, has begun laying out the groundwork for the construction of a proposed Kuala Lumpur-Klang bus rapid transport system.
Yeah, so, okay, I guess this is quite interesting because when you think about the BRT, now, the BRT we have, I think the only BRT we have in the country is that BRT Sunway Line project, the private public-private partnership project between Prasaran and Sunway Group. This is an eco-friendly electric bus services on elevated highways, tracks for Bandar Sunway. Now, I find this fascinating because we've got our rail track, our rail plan sorted because we're thinking about rail, light rail, LRT, MRT, HSR, East Coast Rail. But are we thinking about buses? And I wonder if there's this certain jinx or perception about buses that we just can't seem to get right in Malaysia. I remember speaking to the Prasarana Prasarana CEO on the Breakfast Grill, Managing Director, Azmi Abdul Aziz at that point in time. This was a couple of years ago. And asking him, you know, why is it we can't get our bus system right? Why is it we can't have a BRT? And he goes, well, you know, we want to, but often you see how it is. Drivers drive in the bus lanes. We have bus lanes on the federal highway. But you see motorbikes and cars sneaking into that lane to beat the jam. Can we as Malaysian drivers live and obey the rules if we put a BRT in place?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail there, Melissa, because I love the idea of a BRT. Not only that it's cheaper, I think there are figures being bandied around that it costs about $1 million or ringgit per kilometer to construct BRT stations, but compare that to the MRT, right? We're talking about 50 billion ringgit and counting, which results in slightly over ¥1 billion per kilometre. So ¥1 billion versus ¥1 million. I mean, the economics are pretty obvious there, but it's more than just constructing stations along the highways, bus stations along the highways. It's about a total change.
It's a system. It's a
in
system.
Our philosophy,
yeah.
Right? About how we treat our roads and how we think about the transportation blueprint. Do we always need to be tied up to expensive infrastructure?
Well, you know, you only have to go to Jakarta to see an example of a busway system, a BRT system. You know, they have dedicated lanes in a way that we don't quite have here in Kuala Lumpur in the Klang Valley. And, you know, and it makes such a difference. And you know, it needs to be policed. And if you don't have that, then you really don't have a bus rapid transit system.
You know, what was interesting was when you think about the bus rapid transit, the BRTs, there are certain best practices around the world that have ensured BRTs work. One of them is to put the BRT alignment in the center of the road rather than the side of the road because that avoids your typical curbside delays. The other thing is also to make sure that the stations have off-board payment system, so you're not delaying passengers getting up and down, trying to pay the driver and all that. So that makes the process really quick and simple. Essentially, it's all about good design and changing people's behaviours, right? So just, that's how a BRT will work.
Exactly. Just thinking out of the box a little bit and having all these creative and innovative fixes for a transportation system instead of just by default gravitating to very, very expensive projects.
Right. Next up, Silk Holdings has entered into a conditional share purchase agreement with Permodalan Nasional Berhad, or PNB, to sell its toll concession seat of the Silk Highway for the estimated price of 380 million ringgit.
More about transport this morning.
Yeah, they've made about 137% out of this. And I think it's a good thing because PNB has the mandate to provide for their customers, their unit trust holders into the future. And we also have these new heads coming into PNB. Tan Sri Wahid Omar, has big plans for PNB coming at a time when there is severe retirement sufficiency issues in the country. So they need to think out of the box as well. This is one of those conventional, traditional, stable investments that would give them good dividends, but they're also thinking of other things like moving into the tech sector, and they have ambitions to grow their funds by a not very ambitious amount, around 5% per year over the next 5 years. I guess they can be more ambitious, but this is a start.
Well, they have other highway concessions in their portfolio. I think they've got the project Lintasan Kota Holdings, which has the Akle and the Kota Kemuning Highway as well. But, you know, it's interesting that PNB has become the successful purchaser of Silk Highway, because previously I think there were other companies that were other parties that were interested. IGM wanted to buy it, Taliworks wanted to buy it, WZ Satu wanted to buy it, and they all that deal fell through. So PNB is the final winner.
Okay, moving on, there are reports of the Liaoning Rust Belt province fabricating its fiscal numbers. And this is interesting partly because of sometimes, and maybe very popular criticism of China, is that the numbers are being massaged by the central government. But here we have an instance of a provincial government fabricating numbers.
So is this the tip of the iceberg?
Well, aren't China GDP numbers set to come out later this week, if I'm not mistaken? Yeah, so that would be, I mean, the timing of this is really quite unfortunate that this story broke just before the numbers. It makes you then look at the numbers with a kind of a raised eyebrow. But I also want to point out that I've been reading quite a number of reports that say the way the rest of China, so not outside of China, views China can also be quite mistaken, the way we've been viewing China. China we see as one economy, whereas in fact, it's made out of many different economies working together. It's like the United States of China, if I may say that.
But, or the China Union. Not the European Union, but the China Union, where everyone keeps to a fiscal objective and inflationary objective.
So different parts of China are working, they're operating at different levels of economic growth, right? So to just have one figure to see the way, it's not truly reflective of China. So
I think it also puts in the spotlight how relevant the GDP number is. And I think in this vein, we saw that recently in the Davos meetings, they were talking about an alternative indicator to the GDP as a reflection of people's happiness and people's satisfaction.
Right.
Does it really matter if your GDP numbers are fake?
Yeah, I think
that's a facetious question.
Yeah,
I'm not suggesting
I think in addition to GDP numbers, I think they were looking for other ways of measuring welfare in nation states. But just to point out some facts about this story, the fabrication happened between the years 2011 and 2014. So I'm wondering, my question would be, was this an audit of the numbers coming, you know, substantially later, right? So it's got 2 years later that we're seeing the story emerge. And so is there, and if this is true, then clearly there's a process by which people are being held to account for the numbers they're producing.
It did come from the National Audit Office from last year's report, and I think it's only now surfacing.
Maybe this is part of Xi Jinping's plan to further his corruption witch hunt.
Well,
maybe some heads might roll.
Maybe they may. Okay. We're coming up to the news very shortly. And after that, of course, we have the Breakfast Grill. Julian, you're going to be speaking to Dr. Mohammad Abdul Karim Abdullah, Group CEO of Serba Dynamica. Next up soon, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.